You're both allowed to go. I mean, it's all
everyone. This is Steve.
I've been 5 days without anger issues in IT. It's been 6 days since without Jira, making a Jira posting. 7 days without opening an ITSM ticket.
That's a really good thing, isn't it?
No. I'm just kidding. It's just like I was dealing with somebody who she's trying to use an SOW to pin me down on certain things. Do a lot for this customer. So yeah. I've gotten into not knocked down fights with her, but I've gotten down to her not accepting no as an answer.
Fair enough.
Trying to humiliate me. She's a contractor too.
Ew.
So she's trying to humiliate me in front of the customer, and I just can't kind of don't engage with that. So I decided to just not deal with it anymore and escalate to my boss, who is going to give her a beating tomorrow.
Fair enough. That sounds awful. I'm sorry you're going through that.
It's okay. People who are older tend to see the world in certain lights and lenses.
Fair enough.
Not advocating for the elderly.
It's a very diplomatic way to put it, Steve.
I've been accused of worse.
Fair enough. Sean, what's going on your side?
I mean, the way that Steve started there, I got this song stuck in my head. So thanks, Steve. I'm not going to sing it, but I will just recite the first line or two, which says, "It's been 1 week since you looked at me, cocked your head to the side and said, I'm angry."
Uh-oh.
So anyways, no, I'm not angry. I'm bemused by some older colleagues who fucked over another older colleague who I actually like and is very confident or competent at her job.
Wow.
With a lot. And because of that, being the younger person, relatively speaking, at least, that knows how to like do stuff that the older people don't know how to do, independent of admins and such, has somewhat flummoxed me a little bit tonight, and I'm still dealing with that. So if I should stop paying attention at any point, that's probably what I'm dealing with. But I'm here because I'd rather be here talking to you guys than dealing with all that shit. So, yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad you are here. I'm glad both of you are here because it is a glorious night. The first night of our Emmy series, which I'm super excited about. Before we get into that, I have it all set up. Is there anything else in the news you guys want to talk about? Anything else that just happened? Well, I'll go third. I do have something to add, but anyone else in the world of TV movies they want to talk about? Sean, start with you.
So Steve and I were chatting off air. He is now caught up on Hot D, and we can go into that in a second. But before I go into that, I am now fully caught up on X-Men 97.
Sick.
And trying to think of what else. There's one other point there. Anyways, really liking it so far. And I think the last episode was kind of a nice little episode 5 was like a nice little breather after like all the really heavy stuff had been going on previous to that. So like kind of tracking the same way that season 1 did, which I really enjoyed. I if you guys haven't watched it or caught up on it, I'd highly recommend it. It's like just as good as season 1 so far. Maybe even better, like on the whole, and that's kind of a high bar. But Steve has caught up on Hot D, so
amazing.
We can certainly talk about that, and all of the various cats and memes and such that have gone hand in hand with that, apparently.
Well, let's start there, Steve. What are your thoughts now that you're all caught up? Any initial questions? Yeah, let's get into this.
I like where they're going with the Hightower. I did catch that right. They are making coins with his face on it, right? And that's like,
yeah. So they're making coins with Daron the Young Dragon, or not the Young Dragon, the Daron the Daring. So there are multiple Darons in the history. The Young Dragon's a different one, so forget that. But Daron the Daring's face on a coin as if he is the monarch. So that's a fun little twist.
Oh, yeah, and so and it's basically like him saying like, "I'm letting you know it's me." Would that be an accurate take?
Yeah, absolutely. And the he who is doing it is Ormund Hightower, who's the uncle of the Dowager Queen and just a new big bad for the season and knocking out of the park so far, in my opinion, at least. Yeah,
he's definitely a rude doodle. Also, is he is the Hall Harrenhal? Is she actually recouping him, and is he going through some sick twisted shit? And did the dragon fly off? Like,
Yeah. So you mean Aemond, who's currently at Harrenhal, doing the Daemon arc from season two?
Yes.
Kind of. I think she is healing him. She is actually. She was called a healer by the last Castellan who Aemond so unceremoniously killed so that Alice could steal his wardrobe. You know. Anyways, yeah, so that was I'm pretty sure that she has been taking care of him and like helping him heal, but I think she's also like kind of along the lines of what she said to Daemon in episode one or two, where she's like, "I want Harrenhal," and he's like, he kind of like laughed at her. He's like, "No."
Yeah.
And then she's like, "All right." So I think she's still trying to find somebody who's going to agree to her, like, give me Harrenhal. So I think she found somebody, and now he owes basically her his life. So I'm pretty sure that, you know, that relationship is going to turn out a little differently than she did with Daemon. But there's definitely some shady witchcrafty type stuff going on with them too.
I wonder if it's the same actress from The Witcher.
Well, yeah, I think she's doing a much better job in this, to be honest. Although, you know, I think a lot of The Witcher was on the writing in the later seasons, but that's another story. Yeah, she did a great job. I also think I am glad that they are leading. I understand that, like, in the Game of Thrones universe, it is a little bit grounded's not the right word, but it's definitely more focused on, you know, character, not like magic and all of that stuff as much as, you know, other high fantasy. So it's kind of cool as someone who like always plays a wizard in every D&D campaign and like always magic class in any game. It's cool to see more of that in this universe. I'll leave it there. This is my opinion.
Fair enough. Also, is Crispin just a chud?
Okay, so I know how he died. They could change it. I know where his arc is going to end and probably how. And I kind of, not that I feel any kind of sympathy towards him, towards the character. I think he deserves whatever he gets at this point. But I do like his very fatalistic, like, what does it matter what we do? We're all going to die anyways. This is, you know, like, the second that the dragons started engaging in this war, it was over for, like, regular people like us. And
yeah,
I just kind of want it. So, like, let's just keep doing things that's going to facilitate that is kind of how I took, am taking his, you know, more recent actions. I feel really bad for Gwaine, who at this point in the book is dead. So he's playing with house money at this point and living on borrowed time. And I can tell you that.
You think they kill him off still? Like, or is it?
I don't know. Well, I can tell you for sure. Not for sure. Because I obviously haven't seen what happens the last three episodes this season. Yeah. I will be incredibly surprised if Kristen Cole makes it out of this season alive.
Oh, okay.
I won't tell you how it happens. I won't tell you any other details, but I'd be shocked. And that makes me think, well, it seems like they're splitting up, no? Like, it seems like maybe Gwaine is going elsewhere and Kristen's like, I'm going to continue going on my route until somebody kills me.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know, I kind of like Gwaine, and I feel bad for him. Like, of all the greens, I feel like he's the one who's like, why did I get thrown in with this guy? And also, like, I don't want to die. So, you know, like, I feel like he should just go back to Old Town and just shut his mouth. But, you know, rarely decent things happen to decent people in these shows. So he's probably on his way out, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have to give Corley's, I felt so bad for.
Yeah.
Like, he deserved that crash out. Like, the dog, like, literally lost everything trying to support her. Keeper bastard's a secret. He lost a brother, his son, his wife. Had his keep sacked. A quarter of his fleet sunk. He's currently advising her, financially supporting her, provides her with pretty much the largest navy in Westeros. Has two of his granddaughters riding dragons for her. And she can't even have the decency to be like, yeah, just like legitimize my bastards, please.
Also, you just kind of get like underwater.
Oh. Nope. Everybody here? Sorry, it glitched out for a second there.
Yeah, it glitched out there.
My audio got kind of weird. You guys hear me, Billy?
I can definitely hear you. Yeah, is everything else? Can you hear us?
Yeah, it sounds like garbled, but like kind of echoey and distant.
All right, hold on. Let me see if I can close anything in the background here. I don't need Discord. I just started revamping my mom's Wi-Fi at her house, and next week I'll be home. But like, so I think, you know, it's I'm fixing stuff and I'm waiting for.
That was really good. Or whatever that you did.
Okay, all right. Yeah. I just closed a bunch of stuff in the background.
Close Napster.
Oh, never mind. Spoke too soon.
Nope. Testing? Any better?
No.
Nah, better?
I would, maybe
huge mistake.
Yeah.
Let me turn off my video. Maybe that'll help.
Okay.
Testing.
No, I'm still coming here at all, but
better? Damn.
Maybe I even read really fast.
Huh? It's not coming across.
Maybe it's on my end.
You'll join it. Do we join, Sean?
Yeah, I'll hear it.
Yeah. Steve, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you great.
Oh, okay, cool. So, all right. Well, I'll leave it then. What else besides, and I want to get back because I'll wait for Sean gets back to keep discussing House of the Dragon. Anything else? You've been experiencing this week, Steve?
Oh, you know, I haven't had too much in the way of time to watch anything. I restarted Silo with my buddy.
Sick.
To get caught up on that. So we'll I think there's only 4 episodes out. So we'll get caught up on that pretty soon. Another good week.
Okay. Can you guys hear me?
Oh yeah
I can hear you perfectly.
Oh yeah. You're clear now too. So whatever.
Amazing.
Oh, okay.
I fixed it. I think
you fixed it. Yay.
Yay, hooray.
I fixed something. I don't know what it was.
I have not seen the new Spider-Man trailer. But I hope it's good.
or Doomsday. Doomsday was
Doomsday.
Doomsday looks interesting. I don't know if it's like gonna hit endgame stats, but it looks cool. I love RDG or Robert Downey trying to do a like European accent. Nandor. Very funny.
I've heard him compared to Nandor. Now I can't unhear it.
Nandor. Oh, shit. Now I got to hear it again. Fuck.
I demand your total supplication.
That is hilarious. Yeah, okay. Back to House of the Dragon.
Yeah.
Did Helena did bother anybody else this week?
No. Like, actually, not... she's been doing a thing was relatively important. if they figure it out. I'm not positive there. But I do think that, like, her being pregnant is actually really interesting. One, like, I think it's Aegon's, but setting that aside, she actually has another son in the books, and it actually made like that was one of the reasons why George Martin got really upset at last season was how they like changed her arc.
Okay.
So I don't know if this is them like trying to like work that in. I don't know how they're going to do it. But
does the poison kill her baby? Because that was kind of like, I don't know if that was the implication or was it just to like, you know, get like confused Mistress of Whispers. What's ever her?
I don't know. I don't know if it's, I feel like, you know how like plan B is not effective after a certain amount of time. I feel like the same thing with plan T. So I think that's kind of that's my rough understanding of that's not going to be successful regardless of whether she, you know, drinks it on the regular or not. I think she's too far gone at this point, especially considering that Aegon's long gone from the castle at least. And so presuming that it's his, and I think it would be a mistake for them to make it anybody but his. Yeah, I just think that it would have to be quite a while, and she's probably, I would say, at least a couple months in, if not maybe even longer.
Fair.
You know, 3 months in, somewhere in there. So I just don't see it. You never know. I think she's going to end up having that baby. Be interesting to see what happens with it. Again, I know what happens to that child in the books, and I know what happens to all these people. And for the most part, none of it's good. So we'll just have to see how that goes.
And what about was it Roddy? Who was Roddy with?
Roddy,
the ruin, the guy they can't cross the river.
Oh, Tommy Flanagan.
Yes, I don't know where I got Roddy from. I'm sorry.
What do you mean? Who is he with? Like in the episode?
It's Tully, right? Like they were just like they can't cross the river.
All the Tully.
But yeah, they kind of like their story kind of just got stopped because they can't cross that river.
Yeah, I think Mark and Gunn, they made it across because they already finished.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
Fair. So do you think that the next episodes, we only have three left, will follow what has happened previously? Are they gonna follow the books, or are they gonna change something? And like, what would it be? Because like, I was gonna ask you, what do you think is gonna happen next? But if you read the book, you kind of know.
Next is gonna be the battle, or maybe both the battle, both them going off the biggest thing that's going to happen in that episode, just generally with Game of Thrones type series. I presume it'll happen in 7, but it might happen. And it's going to be like a really big, probably set piece dragon battle. I believe there are going to be lots of dragons involved with it.
Sick.
I'm not sure if Aemon gets involved with that or not. I don't think he does in the book, and I don't see it with his arc right now, but that could be interesting. But I presume it's going to be like most of the Hightower forces that are in Tumbleton, and then Rhaenyra's dragon seeds. Daemon is not there in the book, so I don't know if they're going to put him there in the show or not. But I think it's going to be pretty cool. It's not going to be the last battle of Tumbleton by any means. And I think that there's probably some major fallout from it that's going to come in either the 7 or 8, depending on, I guess, when that battle takes place.
Fair enough. Okay. What was the other thing I wanted to talk about? I'm long last clear eyed about the world and my place in it. Is that like, I love that line. Is that because it feels like Kristen giving up, but like, we're not just giving up, but like, fine, if this is the way it's going to be, this is how it is. I really liked that. I don't know. Like, that's really stood out to me on this episode. So I took notes on it.
I think he's giving one hell of a performance. Fabian Frankel. I actually remember his name, but because I do appreciate what he's doing. I'm pretty good with names though, but no, I, with performers and actors and such, I'm not good with people who I meet names. But I like that line too. I think he's just feeling hopeless, and I think he's feeling, not that he doesn't want to win. I think he knows that for somebody who's already risen so high from coming from nothing, that he's kind of hit his ceiling. And I think he's expecting nothing but bad things to start happening to him, whether he believes they're deserved or not. I couldn't tell you, but I feel like he just knows that the way things are turning, the pity for him is that I think he would really love Ormund Hightower. And I don't know if they're going to get the opportunity to actually meet because of what is likely coming for him.
Fair. I kind of understood it as like everyone was doomed. Like as soon as it started, like there are no winners, no matter what, like even if he was on, like there's no good outcome here regardless. I don't think it's like I lose. I interpret it more as we all are going to lose.
I wonder, too, there's a piece of, for him, like, his only happy ending was going to be if, like, season one Rhaenyra had accepted his offer to, like, basically run away with him to Essos. Like, and once that was off the table, once everything happened the way it did, like, there's no, like, his fate was sealed. Like, that was literally his only way out to have any semblance of a, like, happy, healthy, long-lived life. I feel like that is now completely gone for him. And I think that he's starting to resign himself to that fact.
Fair.
Not that, maybe not, I don't think he would actually say that that was his last shot, just because he's bitter about that still. But I think in terms of where he's going, I think he really knows that she said yes, and that's the only chance he'd really have to live a, like, actual, like, long life. Like, his life is, his clock is ticking, so to speak, now.
Fair. We could also interpret it as, you know, as like everybody else in this episode, that everything is, oh my God, Hightower, what's her first name? Her fault. Because it seems like Allison? She's blamed for everything. Allison, yeah. She's blamed for everything.
I don't think he's blaming her. I think.
No, I think that was more of a joke to say everybody in this episode was blaming her for everything.
If anything, I have to give Otto Hightower credit because he really tried to make the realm stronger versus like doing things like he only wanted to have like a stronger realm. In my opinion,
no, it's fair enough. All right, anything else we want to talk about before we move on? Is there anything else, either this or another show that's been on your minds? Anything else this week?
No, Matt, any shows on your mind?
Well, yeah, I did. I did see The Odyssey.
What'd you think?
How was it?
So, it, you know, I'm kind of upset that it was okay.
All right.
And what I mean by that, it wasn't as good as everybody is making it out to be by a long shot. But it also wasn't like terrible.
Yeah.
It just kind of felt like meh. It felt like this is among the movies I've seen this year. Like, that's all I could say about it. I was like, yeah, I get it. But like, for something that was billed as like this epic, as like everything, you know, being like to the 10th, nth degree, it was just like, it was kind of like nothing seemed like there was no big, huge battles like Troy or any like, and Anne Hathaway, who I know is capable of it, did a freaking terrible job acting. But I know she's capable of more, and you know, like,
No.
It's funny that like, it's kind of like mediocre, and that kind of I guess the only thing that annoys me is that everyone seems to love it. And I was like, but what was it about it that you loved? Like, it was just kind of mediocre. It wasn't. I've seen good, as much as I hate Christopher Nolan, I've seen good things from him, and I've definitely seen amazing visuals from him, and this had neither.
Did John Barenthal do his usual, let me tell you something?
Oh, yes. 100% and multiple times. John Barenthal just played John Barenthal.
I knew it.
And also, there was like this whole movement about how it's so like, and I don't care about the wokeness or whatever. It wasn't really woke at all. There wasn't like anything, but like, there was this thing about, oh, it's all about women now. And like, you know, it's women empowerment, like, was the big message. Like, women are on the screen for about 10 minutes. It's mostly Matt Damon, which is fine because that's the story of Odysseus. But like,
did Matt Damon make it home?
What's up?
Did Matt Damon make it home?
I mean, yeah.
Steve, you're asking him to spoil a thousands of year old story, but whatever.
Yes, they did add. They did make some allegory like that was not in the, that I don't remember being in the book, about Zeus's law, about how we're treating everybody, you know, treating everyone with respect. Like, when someone comes over, you offer them a meal, you accept, you open your house to them.
And I mean, you can think too, like, a quarter of Matt Damon's movie is him getting home for most of his movies, though. So, Interstellar, right? The Martian.
Yes.
Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Most of his movies are about Matt Damon wanting to go home. This is a revelation, and now I'm going to go back through his IMDb to figure out how often this happens. I'm intrigued. I need to do research.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get that tangent.
No, there. It's okay. All I was really going to say was that they definitely tried to make it about today, right? Like, there's this overarching theme is like there's these villains coming to like, you know, invade, and that's why Ithaca needs to be strong, so it needs a king. Right. And like there's these enemies coming. And then the big reveal at the end, which is like all of his reveals, that love is the ultimate answer to everything in Inception, which still bothers me, was that it was us the whole time. We're losing Zeus's law. We're losing our kindness to each other.
Are we the bad guys?
Yeah, exactly.
Are we the baddies?
Which literally made me like angry. But like, again, that was the only thing that raged me. Otherwise, it was just exceedingly mediocre. There was this one scene. So obviously there's the story of the Trojan horse, right? And yes. One of the most, so considered one of the most gripping parts of the movie was when they're all hiding in the Trojan horse thing, they're waiting for the Troy to like take it and bring it into the city. And there's this heart-wrenching moment. Mm-hmm. They have to all be quiet, but like the people on the bottom of the horse are drowning because the tide came in. And it's like, oh my God, they had to all be silent, let these people die. And it's like, if Odysseus was as smart as everyone keeps saying he is, wouldn't he have just built it farther away from the shore so no one would die?
It like, ain't that kind of movie, kid.
Is this a You Are Not the Guy movie?
I'm just
saying. The soundbite of Harrison Ford just saying that, or more accurately, Mark Hamill doing an impression of Harrison Ford saying that to young Mark Hamill just lived rent free in my head.
Yes, and that's
it's like every time I watch a movie with Matt, it's like, that's not the movie. This is not the kind of movie where you ask that question. So just set it out of your head, because it's never going to be answered.
That's totally fair. And you know, it seemed like moment to moment. It seemed like very TikTok-ish. It's like, for this generation that can't keep their attention span, because it's a 4-hour movie, but it feels like three stories that just keep changing
that back long? And forth.
I'm exaggerating. It was like 3 hours.
That's still okay. Well, I was expecting 3 hours, but 3 hours is still a long movie.
Yeah, but for 3 hours, it felt very disjointed.
Did you see it in IMAX or did you see it on like a? Regular.
No, I saw it in a big theater, but I saw it at the Alamo, which is my only other non-IMAX theater, because the Alamo, hashtag not sponsored, the Alamo rules. Yeah. Have you ever been to one of those theaters? They're great.
Yeah, they're nice. I like it. They're good environment.
But I'm going to see it with IMAX with one of my friends, because I promised one of my buddies, Liam, that I would take him to it in IMAX. So I will see if that helps. But like I said, I didn't hate it, but I also didn't like, it kind of feels bad that I didn't have any strong opinions about it. You know what I mean?
It's a star-studded cast, too. It's like probably one of the biggest star-studded ones I've seen.
I think your criticism, for the most part, although I think I enjoy them a little more than you do. I think that's fair. I mean, I would say that he's never made a truly bad movie.
No. No, I would never ever like.
And so yeah, and I think definitely with the cast that he had, with the talent he had in that movie, I would hope not. Like he would completely bungle that.
Yeah,
but I almost feel like the greater movie Sin is not making a bad movie that's laughably bad. It's making a movie that like is just not interesting.
Yeah, that's kind of what I felt. I mean, I did cry, but anyone would cry when a dog stays alive for 21 plus years just to wait for someone to come home. And that's like the moment they know it's Odysseus, is when his dog is like sees him and wags his tail while he's like sitting outside, like barely moving. Like that's just emotional manipulation. I am not a, like any dog doing that would make me cry. I just want to put that out there.
I understand.
So the dog makes it through most of the movie. What else can you spoil for us?
Well, it's obvious from the beginning. It's this like, because they say like one of the first parts of the movie is like that dog is over 20 years old. It's like he's waiting for his master to come home.
Mm-hmm.
And then his master comes home and immediately dies. But anyway.
How was the music? Did Hans Zimmer do it, or did you have somebody else do it?
Whoever did the music did incredible. Let's see. Soundtrack by composer Ludwig Göransson.
Göransson,
sorry. I don't know.
He's if it's not going to be Hans Zimmer, it should either be him or Gene Keno. Those are like, yeah. Oh, well, yeah. Yeah. The three of them, if not Zimmer, then I'm good with any of them.
Yeah, but it was exactly what I expected. The music was great. Like I said, it just felt, you know,
contrived and boring.
Yeah.
Shallow and pedantic.
Shallow and pedantic. I would say if you're interested, wait, you know, like, unless you're seeing an IMAX, I haven't seen an IMAX yet, but like, I didn't see, like, they kind of said, oh, every second of this was shot in 70 millimeter IMAX, which is like 10 theaters in the world, like, to support that.
Yeah. That's what I read. Okay. Cause I was like, somebody was saying, I saw some names.
And they're all owned by Christopher Nolan. What a surprise. Right?
Except for the one that's owned by Tarantino, the Arclight. But anyway, like, from what I saw, there was no moments in that movie that like benefited from 70 millimeter IMAX. You know what I mean? Like very few battles. It's mostly, like when I was like, oh my God, they're bringing Star Wars to IMAX. Even if it's like any of the like Phantom Menace, I was like, yes. Like those are movies that like look better in IMAX.
Sound alone would be worth it for Phantom Menace.
Agreed. But like this, I don't think anything in here benefited from it. From what I saw, I will caveat that I have not seen an IMAX yet, and I will, and I'll give you a better judgment later. But
okay.
You know, unless you want to see that unique experience of 70 millimeter IMAX, like wait and see, and you can watch it in chunks. And you don't have to watch it all at once.
Yeah, see, like, that's kind of where I'm thinking. Like, it's already a 3-hour movie, so, like, your chances of keeping my attention that entire time, not great. And the fact that, like, you know, I don't really like being that guy to, like, pull my phone out and just, like, start, like, you know, doing whatever I'm going to be doing to distract myself when I get bored in a movie. Like, when I go to the movies, I just don't like being that person. I'm probably, and especially a movie like this where I'm going to be like actively like on Wikipedia looking stuff up, it's probably best that I just wait till it's viewable at home, and then I decide on how many milligrams of gummies I'm going to eat, and then I'm just going to sit down one afternoon and watch it.
Yeah. You know what? Gummies might be I think when I go with Liam and see an IMAX, I'm going to take a gummy. That sounds like a lovely idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will report because that sounds, I think this is the kind of thing. Anyway. That's all I got to say about that. It also might be, you know, like, I think Jonathan is the better brother, but that's another story completely.
Oh, he certainly is. And he's also the one that doesn't put on the pretentious fake British accent.
Right. And also, like, ghost writ a lot of Nolan's movies. Like, he helps his brother a lot when, you know, it comes to writing.
Yes.
But anyway.
All right. So just out of curiosity. As the most outspoken Nolan critic, I think, of the three of us, at least.
Fair.
Where would you like to see him go next? Because I don't know if he's announced or mentioned what his next project is, or if he knows. He probably has some ideas, I'm sure. But
yeah, I don't know. I think I would like to see... So, obviously, besides Memento, which I did enjoy, I think one of my favorite movies of his we talked about was Dunkirk.
Yeah, I love Dunkirk.
And the reason I love Dunkirk is it's all visual. Like, I've always loved the visual style of Christopher Nolan. Anything, I cannot criticize that. His hokiness and all that stuff, absolutely. And like, you know, pretentious, all that stuff. But I've loved, and I think Dunkirk really is like where his wheelhouse is, because it doesn't rely on story, or like it is just event. And it's like this really epic, like tense thing. That's where he succeeds, and I would love to see him do more experimenting like that, because really Dunkirk felt like an experiment, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I think he should go, do something like that. I know he said he's wanted to do the Odyssey for a very long time, but You know, what about you? What do you think where you should go?
So, I, he's obviously been doing press and stuff for this movie. So I've seen a lot of stuff with him, particularly on like TikTok and stuff, and other various cast members, or whatever. And the thing that interviewers love bringing up with him is that his one of his favorite movies is Talladega Nights.
Really?
Like, that's like the movie he goes back to and rewatches all the time.
Interesting.
Probably knows every line too, like that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And he's never done a comedy, like a true out and out comedy. And I mean, look, like you've developed this incredible roster of performers who will do whatever movie you want them to do. You just have to call them, it seems, and they'll show up. Why not do like a buddy comedy?
That would be interesting. I would,
but like put the money behind, like put like the all the crazy like cinematography, like make it like you're making another Christopher Nolan whatever summer blockbuster, but make it a freaking buddy comedy, like a Tommy Boy Black Sheep type buddy comedy, like crossing the country or the world or some weird crazy thing, and all they run into all these. I mean, hell, you could adapt The Odyssey again if you really want to. Like,
yeah, right.
I mean, just do something weird like that. Like, cause like, that's the thing that stands out to me about like, he doesn't have, like, he's got epics, he's got superheroes, he's got crime. Like he's got all this stuff, but like,
yeah. It's crime. I love like, Insomnia thinking back, like his early movies were great.
Like, I mean, Tarantino does comedy in his movies. Like, I feel like, you know, like, I'm just like, bro, out there, dude, I'm weird.
It's not a bad idea. I also wouldn't mind a biopic. I guess I liked Oppenheimer, but I think that's because I read American Prometheus. Like I read the book and loved it. And I love that story. But
Oppenheimer?
Yeah. I liked the movie, but I think that was in spite of like because I love the story of Oppenheimer and I read American Prometheus. That was why I liked it more than Nolan had anything to do with it.
Yeah.
But anyway,
it'd be interesting to see him do another historical, like actual historical subject.
Yeah. But I do like the idea of a comedy, too. That sounds. Steve, what about you? What would you like to see?
A Grant biopic.
Oh. Okay. Do you have any specific or just any?
No, like Civil War, like Grant just ripped 24/7 me like today's or Sherman, General Sherman.
Okay. I would love to see a Civil War with all practical effects nowadays because we don't, like, you know, something like that would be because I know he loves his practical effects. So that would be kind of cool.
It would be cash. He could just go out there, have like a really good speech or two, and him just being like, fuck everyone and fuck them kids, and then just destroying the South.
As long as he does it based off a book that's not, well, first of all, the team of people are controlling it. And, I'm not a fan of Cherno. I'd be good with that. I actually think Grant's a really interesting character.
I do too.
If you look at it like from the perspective of like Civil War, so obviously he's like from what I understand being history.
Yeah.
Documentaries and stuff is that he had like a compass in there, even if he was as well, like the flip side of like the Union side of Gone with the Wind. I know that there's already a slave side of Gone with the Wind, I think called Wind Undone. I think the play adaptation of the Union, you know, that would be interesting. It's like going in without burning your way forward. Freeing slaves along the way, and then like you're basically stuck there during Reconstruction, and you're having to fight off the Klan, which the Klan are in Gone with the Wind. So it would be interesting to see the flip side of it, especially given the some people didn't need reminding them first he was a failed racist who deserved death, and they didn't get it. But you know, whatever.
Huh. Fair enough. I am intrigued.
Yeah.
Should be cool. All right. Anything else you want to cover before we move to tonight's main event?
No, let's get it on.
All right. Very good. Very good. So on the agenda today, we are going to start our Emmy series with something we discussed a little bit next week, and I wrote it down. So we are going to watch Widow's Bay this week. Something that got let me make sure I got the number right. 19 Emmy nominations, including Outstanding Comedy Series, Outstanding Lead Actor, Directing, Writing, Supporting, like all pretty much everything. And it is comedy. It says it's a horror comedy. I have not seen this, nor do I know much about it. Either of you have any, like, you know, connection or have watched Widow's Bay before?
I've seen the trailer a million times, but I think I've seen, like, in, like, half watching, like, the first maybe 5 minutes or so.
Yeah.
Like, nothing about this to me is, at any point in seeing the trailers or seeing the first 5 minutes of it, has screamed comedy. And, like, already somewhat apprehensive of that label just because of how they handled the bear being in the comedy category for the Emmys. I'm not totally sure that this is like a similar type thing where it's like probably more of like a crime thriller, but my hope for it is kind of maybe like landing somewhere in like the Fargo area, like where it's like, you know, there are moments where it can get kind of like tense and spooky and stressful, but there are also moments where it's just like straight up hilarious. You know, but I love like, what's his name? Matthew Rice.
I love Matthew Rice. I don't know how
the Welsh pronounce that. Anyways, I think he's a good actor. I've loved him in The American, and like, you know, another thing that like, talent to see is something that I can actually watch. And from our perspective, I know, like, you looked at it a few times, but like, Johnny's not big on like her.
I mean, like I said, Kate Dipple, I don't know how to pronounce her name. The creator, who's like best known for, you know, she like started high because Parks and Recreation is great. And then she wrote the bad Ghostbusters movie. And like, so, you know, a mixed bag there, but I know she's capable of good stuff. And everyone seems to love this show. And like, I'm a huge horror comedy is like kind of my, you know, like two favorite things combined. So I'm in. And she's also, she's from Freehold. Holy crap. She's also from New Jersey. But I'm intrigued, but I also know nothing about this. Steve, what about you?
I actually haven't heard anything. So I'll be excited to kind of get unadulterated, unfiltered look. What is
fair enough. Do either of you have any expectations going into this?
I don't.
Heard it good, and it's got a bunch of Emmy now, so I'm going to expect it to be good. But
I'll take it. All right. I don't think there's anything we, you know, none of us have seen it. I'm just going to go with the pilot and hope for the best. Without further ado, season one, episode one of Widow's Bay. All right. First impressions, Sean, what are your thoughts?
I was intrigued. I had some audio issues throughout, so I think I've figured it out if I am sounding clearly now.
You are definitely sounding clearly.
Completely. Yeah, my AirPods were doing something real screwy for like the first half of the pod. So I'm
so sorry about that.
No, that's okay. The bits that I did see were good and I found enjoyable and interesting. I'd like to see where it's going. I think the tone felt about right for what I have presumed it was. I'm intrigued still like at how this kind of a show gets thrown into comedy.
That was kind of my question, and that you addressing the elephant in the room, and this is for both of you. Is this a comedy?
Doesn't feel like. I mean, there are definitely like bits that felt, you know, funny, I guess. They're like, you know, but No. and I'm not sure why it wouldn't count as a drama either. So,
well, good point.
What are your thoughts?
I just don't know. I guess I don't really understand what I think I'm more interested, kind of separate from the discussion of the show now, is like really going in on how the Television Academy, which I think the ones behind the Emmys, designate comedy versus drama. Because this very much feels like a drama with elements that can be funny and quirky, but like, you know.
I think, and I'll get your opinion first, Steve, before, what do you think this is a comedy?
No, I don't think it's a comedy.
Yeah. Because I was reading some reviews as this was happening, because I was intrigued by this exact question, because I had the same thoughts as you. And I was surprised by the number of authors I saw that were like, I was laughing the entire time. This was hilarious. Like, I can't, like, one of the funniest shows ever. And I'm like, are we sure we're watching the same show? Like, there were elements that were funny, absolutely. And there's definitely some absurdity, almost like that, you know, awkward office workplace type humor.
Mm-hmm.
But, and there's some absolutely intriguing elements about this show. And I do want to watch more. Like, I want to at least give it another episode. I am of your guys' opinion. But apparently we're in the minority. Because a lot of the reviews I was reading, especially about episode one, was like, I couldn't believe how funny this was.
Really?
I'm just a little shocked by that. And let me put it this way. I was intrigued, and I could definitely see this being in the more comedic side. Yeah.
Okay.
Until the ending. Because the ending kind of was confirmation that there is something sinister going on. You know, there's this giant torture chamber underneath the town. And, you know, obviously the guy's like was possessed, like, you know, had the white eyes and all that stuff. Like so it's like, it would be much easier for it to be comedy if this was like all in his head and he was just seeing things that were like, you know, almost like, is he just imagining all this? Cause he wants to like, it's all BS. But like he's somehow like being convinced, even though it's not like, but I feel like when there's actually something going on, it kind of takes away some of the humor, right? Or is that just me? Either of you, what were your opinion?
Hard to go off of for a first show.
Yeah.
I think the vibes are there for the horror piece of it. I mean, it's a bit drama-y in the beginning, right? But I think that makes sense that they're setting things up.
Yeah. Sean, what do you think? Could it be a comedy eventually? Like, but like, you know, I feel like it's missing some of the things that make it a comedy, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't want to be without like really looking into it. And I haven't like looked anything up about what it is, Bay, other than knowing it exists and our discussion last week.
Yeah.
If it becomes more comedic, then it's going to be like, I don't know. I'm going to give everybody credit because apparently if it's gotten this many nominations, if this many people like it, it's clearly successful and popular. My inner logic is telling me that that kind of rules out like such a rapid tone change that would have to like throw this like very clear, like, crime, edging on supernatural, not supernatural, thriller, drama into comedy.
Yeah. It's a very loose definition.
And I don't want to, if it were just the Emmy Award saying that this is a comedy, I would kind of shrug it off. But if there are other people going like, no, like this is a comedy, then I'm going to be like, I don't know if I watched the same show as you.
That's what I was thinking. Like,
it was good for what it was, and I the bits that I could clearly see and hear were good. And I definitely want to rewatch this and then see if I want to keep going. Without giving away what my vote is, but like I'm having like major cognitive dissonance over like the fact that people say comedy. Like I want to know why. Like, explain to me why comedy? Because maybe, like, those people are also wrong about how, like, we don't see eye to eye on what comedy is either. Because I just don't. I don't know. It's I forget what Supreme Court Justice said it. It's like, they're talking about porn, but it's like, yeah. I know it when I see it. Like, yeah, like, I may not have the most universal sense of humor, but, like, I know comedy when I see comedy. Like, this doesn't feel like comedy.
Yeah, I think, like, this article starts, and I'm just reading one of the, I just Googled, you know, episode one, Widow's Bay review, and here's one of the lines. The landlady, you think the fog out there is a chef? It may not look like it, but this is some of the funniest dialogue I've heard on TV all year. Delivered by legendary character actor Stephen Root as Wick, the old eccentric harbor man. I got no further than the third sentence in the speech before bursting out laughing. A guy who talks only in the voice of bad Stephen King knockoffs from the 1980s. Why is he speaking my language? So that's like the opening of this article. I read more of it to make sure that, like, we were talking about the same stuff, and it ends the same way with the, you know, him being confronted by, like, the, you know, the guy who's, like, dead. But then, you know, but it's like, it's Stranger Things, but if it was funny, like, I don't get this at all.
I don't know. I don't think they're watching the same show. Unless they're a few episodes in, they're just like, this is.
Maybe. All right. Well, that's the other discussion out of the way. Let's actually talk about the content. Let's remove comedy from the equation. Let's forget about it. Was this a good show, Steve?
Yeah, I think so. I think the casting is actually pretty strong in this.
Absolutely. The framing is amazing.
The framing for the shots are really good. There's a good backdrop for it. It's a little over the top for some areas. Fine, no problem.
But most 1980s horror is, and that's kind of what it feels like it's emulating, you know, like The Fog.
Yeah. I feel like there needs to be like a little bit of that going on. So I honestly find like wanting to know more about The Fog the highlight of that. The low light I find is probably the B storyline with the sun.
Yeah, that was a little weird. That didn't feel funny. That felt really awkward. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like I totally get, like, there's sometimes like adding that little bravado element into it is like just to keep a side, you know, a B plot going.
Yeah. The pullout line really like almost bothered me. Like, I never get like I'm all for gross out, like disgusting. It was like, you know, pulling out doesn't work, and it's like, dude. Yeah, go ahead, Sean.
Yeah, that didn't feel like, I mean, okay, like I did see that scene. I did hear that part. I'm not trying to like quibble with this people who wrote the script or whatever, or the delivery of it. Because honestly, like, I've heard and both been a part of that conversation on at both sides, I believe, not fortunately yet with my 10-year-old child, but you know, anyways, again, that doesn't scream comedy to me. That screams like parenting, being like a mature old, like adult, like talking to a teenager about something that they're doing that's like arguably reckless and dumb.
Yeah.
I don't know. I there are objective comedies on Apple. Like, for example, Margo's Got Money Troubles. Yes, it has dramatic elements, but that is a comedy. And like, it is clear that that is a comedy. Like,
which is something we will watch. It's on the list, by the way.
Yeah, and like same way, and like kind of like if you want to like show, like do a show that like toes the line, like Severance is a great example. Severance can be incredibly funny.
Yeah.
Pluribus can be incredibly funny. But they're also really dramatic, and like it's also clear that they kind of like exist in both. I still don't see how this is comedy.
I know. and the same thing with The Bear, you know, like The Bear. Yeah. The Bear feels more like a comedy than this does.
Yes, exactly. like this feels like a weird. Mm. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, we got off topic because Steve brought up something that was very, very valid. But let's go back to the initial question because Steve answered. Sean, remove comedy from the equation. Is this a good show? Were you intrigued? Etc. He's thinking about it, guys.
Sorry, was that to me?
Yeah, that was you. Sorry, I said to Sean. Sorry, my bad.
Sorry, I heard Steve. And
no, anyways. I said Steve brought up the point. I wanted to ask you the same question. Sorry.
Sorry, say the question one more time.
Yeah, no problem. So if we remove comedy from the equation altogether, let's not even like think about it. Like if it wasn't a comedy, would this be, you know, it wasn't even labeled. Would this be a show you were intrigued by? Did you enjoy it? Would you keep watching?
Yeah, I've been intrigued by it. And I probably would have gave it more of a shot if just like not for like the one person who I watch most shows with, like not being like too into it.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of interested to see where it goes from here. Like, because I feel like maybe I can convince her to watch it. Yeah, I did like it. I thought it was really, again, audio issues aside, I thought it was paced well.
Yeah.
And you know, again, like a good lead actor, a good cast. And actually the I don't know if she's like the female lead or whatever, but like the girl that like he had a bunch of scenes with, she was in a show that I just watched really, we actually binged it like over like a day or two, called My Lady Jane Grey or My Lady Jane.
Oh, yeah.
And she plays Queen Mary. So I was kind of funny seeing her like right away again, but I enjoyed her in that. I'm interested to see how her performance and character is in the show. So yeah, like I'm definitely interested in it. Where it goes from here and whether it kind of hooks me in, like it's not an immediate, like, yes, I'm going to like, the second I'm free up to watch more TV tonight, am I going to throw it on? Nah, probably not.
Yeah.
But is it something that like, once I'm out of other shows to watch, that we've been finishing or been in progress, like would I give it a shot? Like, yeah, I think I would.
Fair enough. I'm going to do something that we very, very rarely do. Cause I think, and in full disclosure right now, I think my vote would be no. I mean, it's because I don't consider it binge worthy right now. All right. By the definition of our arbitrary weird rules, I don't know if I would binge this. However, I want to give it another episode. And I feel like, while I can say no now, I feel like if I'm going to watch it between now and our next episode and watch at least one more, I think we talk about it at the beginning of next show and give it another look, even if I say no now. How does everybody feel about that?
Yeah. I'm good with that.
Sean?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
All right. Anything else we wanted to dive into about this episode, this show right now, before we kind of go to the voting as of this moment? Cool. All right. That being said, Steve, as in this current state, Widow's Bay, episode one, binge-worthy, why or why not?
I'm going to go yeah for me. Okay. I'm just curious about the fog.
Fair enough. No, that's a good enough reason.
Why is it so foggy?
Listen, you know, The Fog was a great movie, so I feel you completely.
Why does he wear the mask?
Sean, same question.
Is it binge worthy?
Yes. Right now. Okay.
Right now. Oh, you son of a bitch.
Well, that's the point, you know? That's good.
I'm gonna say no for now, but I'm already intrigued enough to come back to it and either change my opinion or double down on it. We'll see where that goes.
I think I feel the same way. I am a no now, but I am open to having my opinion changed. And I hope I'm going to watch more to see if that happens. So that's kind of my, you know, not no, no. But we will definitely bring it up at the beginning of the next episode. But yeah, like I said, it was a good show. Like the episode was good. Like I felt it was good, you know, like well paced, well designed. Like I love the cast. Matthew Rhys rules. Rhys, Rhys. Have we, do we ever figure out how it's pronounced? Is it Rhys? Fair. I'm gonna say Rhys. Is great. But you know, I need more. I need like I said, I was a little thrown off by the fact that they're kind of openly admitting that something, I mean, it feels like they're leaning towards supernatural things actually happening, which kind of takes out one of the biggest comedic elements for me, which is like, he might be going insane. Like the best, you know, kind of movies and like the best shows, like in this kind of subgenre where it's like straight guy is going through paranormal shit or you know, is that this, there's this ambiguity of whether he's actually experiencing something paranormal or if there's a rational explanation. This seems like they're kind of throwing the throwing it to one side already. Maybe I'm being too, you know, pessimistic, but that's what I got from this. That's why I voted the way I did. That's all I got to say. Anybody else? Anything to add?
No, I think that was really good.
Fair enough.
Roundabout way of putting it.
All that being said, anybody got a final thought for me?
If the Television Academy would so kindly define the word comedy, as unfunny as that sounds, I want it to be unfunny. I want it to be easily applicable. And I want it to be clear and objective.
Agreed.
Because, like, if something makes somebody laugh, doesn't make it comedy. But it could be if you just tell us what that is. Or you could add some more categories, since TV is now so diverse and has changed since you probably made these categories.
Agreed.
You want to include thriller, if you want to include like documentary, like, I don't know, I'm sure there is a documentary series, but regard, you know what I mean, like, if you want to be more specified, like, also, can we like divorce comedies and musicals, because like,
yeah, agreed,
let's, anyways,
they deserve their own. I wholeheartedly agree. Like, again, I think you were right when these categories were created, there were kind of only like two types of shows, like literally variety / comedy and drama. And now, again, we have the opportunity, like the means, and like, you know, streaming has made it especially prevalent where you can have vastly different, you know, ambiguous shows that don't fall into any good category specifically. Like, and maybe we just have, like, maybe we define it by 30 minutes versus an hour, right? That seems to be like the old breakdown. Is it an hour based show or is it a half hour based show? And I know now with streaming, it's all like 40 minutes in an hour, but like you can tell the difference between an episodic, like shorter show, shorter form versus longer form. So I think
that's right. And I think that like kind of helps you see like the effort that's put into it. Not to say that a half hour show or 20 minute show is any less work than a, you know, hour long or 40 minute show, but I think in terms of like, you're not going to compare, for example, Breaking Bad and What We Do in the Shadows, right? Like,
correct.
Those are two completely different shows. They both have, less so What We Do in the Shadows, but they both have dramatic moments. They both have comedic moments. One has more of the other, and the other has more of the other, whatever.
Yep.
But I think in terms of the style of it, I think the constraints of it, I think it makes sense to almost do it that way.
Yeah.
More so than just like, and then like maybe just like make the total nominees a little bit more. So like you have your 40 to hour long ish category and it's like, you get like 10 shows that are nominated. Same thing with the other one. Like that way that you can at least bring in more. And that's only going to help people in the long run anyway, because like the more nominations get, the more things will succeed and the more people will watch things. And like, it just seems to make sense to me. It just seems like maybe this is just something that's a remnant of how TV was back when it was cable and satellite versus everybody else. And now it's like something that's completely different than even that. So.
Yeah.
Mm.
I would wholeheartedly agree with that. I think that is the perfect note to end on. So with that being said, everyone, see you next week. Okay. Woo doggy. That was interesting.
I apologize. That was a good one. I apologize, but I got to get going.
No, we got an hour in the beginning. I am happy to end it there, guys. That was awesome. And again, cool. I was in a good mood today, but like that really helped. So I hope it helped you guys because that was awesome. I love this one. So thank you. That
was perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. All right.
See you guys soon. Later.
Bye.